So we'll say we're on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, and we finished the sugya of Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim. So just to reiterate, the machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim is whether or not Moshe Rabbeinu was part of the Sanhedrin, and therefore you need 71 judges for a Sanhedrin. That's the sheet of the Chachamim, and they derive it from the word Itcha. Itcha means the atba hadayhu, that you're part of the court. So we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to gather together 70 elders. If you add Moshe, then you jack up the number from 70 to 71. Rabbi Yehuda says that Itcha tells me a whole different halacha. What we derive from Itcha is what we call a psul yuchsin. That not everyone, no matter how brilliant they are and how scholarly they are, is a candidate for the Sanhedrin. And they have to be itcha, they have to be bedomim lecha, and therefore they have to have the yichus in order to sit on the Sanhedrin. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, Moshe Rabbeinu was not actually a member of the Sanhedrin. So how many judges do we need according to Rabbi Yehuda? 70. That's the magic number. So today we begin here on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph with Tanu Rabbanan. So if you're counting from the top of the Amud, it should be about 8 lines down. Let's count it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 lines down from the top. Tanu Rabbanan. We learned in a brisa. Now this brisa is analyzing a parasha called Eldad Umedad, which is in Parashas Bahaloscha. And if you may remember that Eldad Umedad were two Nevi'im that were prophesizing in the Machne. And Yoshua was very upset about this. Exactly why Yoshua was upset about this, whereas Moshe Rabbeinu made nothing of it, we'll have to learn the sugya today, Mirtz Hashem. That's what we want to study. So the pasuk describes Eldad Umedad in Parshas Baloscha, and it says, Vayisharu shnei anashim b'machane. And two individuals remained in the machane. Which means that they didn't join together with all the other zakenim. Again, I don't want to give away all the secrets of this sugya, but we're going to have to understand that this Kanim, which were made up of the number 70, were, at least at one point in time, they were Nevi'im. They were prophesizing. However, they left a certain place, and once they left a certain place, then they no longer prophesied. So their prophecy and that of Eldad Umedad, who are two of the 70, was dependent upon a location. That location, which is called in the language of the Mikra, it's called Machane, is a reference to an area outside of the Ohel Moed. So what we say about Eldad Umedad is Lo Yatsu Im Shara Zakenim Li Oel Moed. In other words, the Zakenim, let's call them 68 in this case, they have the capacity of receiving prophecy, but only in the Oel Moed. So in a certain sense, the Almighty restricted their prophecy to the Ohel Moed. And what Eldad Umedad did was, they were prophesizing outside of the Ohel Moed, in what's called the Machne. So if you could imagine a circle with a hub in the middle, that hub in the middle is called the Ohel Moed. Once you leave the Ohel Moed, you're in the Machne. Now, what is the significance of the fact that Eldad Umedad were in the Machane? And apparently, they were prophesizing in the Machane. what was unique about these two individuals, Eldad Umedad? Why did they take upon themselves that they would prophesize even in the Machne? Now, exactly who Eldad Umedad were in terms of their lineage is very interesting, because it seems, according to Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, they were related to Moshe Rabbeinu, which is very interesting. There was an individual who is called Elitzafan. He was the son of someone called Parnach, and their mother was Yocheved Bas Levi. So we're talking about cousins of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Moshe Rabbeinu to gather together 70 Skedim of Yisrael, and they should all be around Moshe Rabbeinu in the Oel Moed area. And their goal, their function, was Lases Imo B'Masa Ha'am. In other words, as Yisrael had pointed out, it was too much for Moshe to single-handedly carry the leadership and deal with all the issues of every single Jew in Klal Yisrael. So he needed a body of, let's call it a cavalry, you know, some sort of a military force that would help him. That's called Lisa Imo B'Masa'am. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, gather together 70 Zkenim, Lisa Imo B'Masa'am. And as a result of this choice of 70 Zkenim, when Moshe Rabbeinu actually appoints these 70 as the Zkenim of Klal Yisrael, they received Nevuah. And that Nevuah was limited to that area of Misviv Moshe Rabbeinu, which is the same as Misviv Oel Moed. However, two out of the 70, which are Eldad Umedad, they were Misnabim B'machne. Okay. Now, the Braisa that we're learning tries to figure out how Moshe Rabbeinu chose 70 Zkenim. Apparently, in the spirit of democracy, there should be an equal representation of each of the 12 Shvatim. But mathematically, it doesn't really work out. So Moshe Rabbeinu is going to use a lottery in order to figure out how to come up with the number 70. And that's called, in the language of the Braisa, Kalfi. You'll see this word Kalfi in the Mishnayos in Yoma with regard to the Shnei HaSeirim. They had to choose one Lashem and one Lazozel. So they put the two words on different pitkalach. You know, one said Lashem, one said Lazozel. And they mixed it up in what? In a Kalfi. So Kalfi is like a receptacle that's used for a lottery. So the first opinion of the Braisa says the following, that Moshe Rabbeinu put all the names of the candidates representing all the Shvatim, we'll see how many from each Shevet, in the Kalfi. And then what happens is that he didn't take out all of the names. Some of them, if you look in the Braisa, Nishtairu. Nishtairu means they were left over. So let's see what that means. Shebishosham Allah HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe. Moshe gets the command from on high. Esfah li shivim ish mizikne Yisrael. God says, gather for me 70 members of the Zkenim, of the elders of Israel, and they will be set up as the Sanhedrin. Omar Moshe, Moshe said, Ketzad Eser. How am I going to divide up the 70, the number 70, equally in the 12 Shvatim? Ever shisha mikol shevet v'shevet. If we multiply 6 times 12, we're left with the number 72. Am I correct? Mm-hmm. So we have now two extra Zkenim that have to be rejected. Again, not that we necessarily held anything against them, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're going to have to help me out over here through this lottery system. You have to decide which two of the 72 candidates, because we're going to get 6 representatives from each one of the 12 Shvatim, which two out of the 72 have to be rejected. So what happens is that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to take out 6 times 12, and that gives us the number 70. But he's going 72. But he's going to have to leave two pitkaot, you know, two of these notepads, you know, left inside. Nimsu shnayim yaserim, right? Because he's got now 72. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, let me try a different possibility. And maybe this would be more successful. Evrar chamisha chamisha mikol shevet v'shevet. If we take five representatives from each one of the 12 shvatim, so then we'll come up with the number 60. Am I correct? Mm-hmm. I need your help, Rabbi Osei, right? Yeah. Isn't it so that 12 times 5 is 60? So nimtzu asara chaserim. That's not going to be a good idea. So instead of having a surplus of 2, and namely by multiplying 6 times 12, you're ending up with 72. If I multiply 12 by 5, I'm missing 10. Ever shisha mishevet zeh, v'chamisha mishevet zeh. So what I could do is I could put into the kalfi 6 zekanim from this shevet, let's say from 10 out of the shvatim. So let's say if we multiply 10 times 6, we have 60. And then I'm left with 2 shvatim, and I need to be mashin from 60 to 70. So how many am I going to take from each one of those 2 shvatim? 5. V'chamisha mishevet zeh. From each of 2 shvatim, we'll take 5. So that's not democratic. Hareini matil kina bein ha-shvatim. That's going to engender jealousy amongst the shvatim. Why did you downgrade 2 out of the 12 shvatim, and they only have 5 representative candidates and not 6 like the other 10 shvatim? Me'asa. So what did Moshe finally do? He went back to the first possibility. And we're going to take shisha shishiv. So from each shevet, we're going to get 6 candidates, multiplying 12 times 6, and you end up with 72. So now he has a surplus of 2. Hevi shivim ushnayim piskin. Right? Yesterday we wished everyone, for those out of the minute ago, no, shatarama piskin tova, right? That Hashem should write you down, you know, with good stuff for the year to come, right? So the Pisgah was this notepad, if you will, this note in which they wrote on 72 notes, 72 pieces of paper, the names of 72 candidates, 6 from each of the 12 shvatim. What did he do with these notepads? Al shivim, on 70 out of the 72, kasav zaken, that you, if you pick up this piece of paper, it means that you are elected as one of the members of Sanhedrin. But Shnayim, with the surplus to Ptakim, he niach chalak, so there was nothing written on them, and blown, and he mixed them all together. The son of Makalfi puts them into this receptacle. The Oral, and he turns to 72 Zkenu, bo utlu piskeha. Each one should take out of this Kalfi one petek. Call Misha Olabi Yodos Zaken. If he finds that when he opens up the Pentecost, it says the word Zaken, it means that God chose him. Omar, Moshe would declare, Kfar Kidosh, Kfar Kideshcha. Shamayim, you've been chosen to be sanctified by Shamayim. You were chosen by God to sit in the Sanhedrin. Now Moshe gets a little harsh. And he says, "Mishal biyado chalak." If you have no word zaken on your petek, Omar Moshe turns to him and says, "Amakum lo chafetz b'cha. I would have chosen you, but what can I do? My hands are tied because God doesn't want you on the Sanhedrin." Again, it's a little bit bothersome here. What do you mean God doesn't want you on Sanhedrin? Maybe you are roi for the Sanhedrin, but you're not as great as the other 70. So relative to the other 70, is Hashem lo chafetz b'cha. Maybe the mussar here, the ethics that we should derive here, is that if somebody is not chosen for a job, he should look inside, and in introspection, maybe he should try to think how he could better himself. You know, he could have achieved a greater potential. I don't know. I need my esalacha, but my hands are tied. I have nothing to do over here. God didn't choose you. So now we go back to the pasuk that we started with. it says Vaisharu Shnei Anoshim B'machne, that Eldad Umedad remained behind in the Machne. So what does it mean? It means that Eldad Umedad were amongst the 72 potential candidates to sit on the Sanhedrin. However, they were meant to put their hands, each one of them, Eldad Umedad, into the Kalfi and pull out a petek. But they refused to do so. They remained in the Machne. They were, so to speak, hedging their bets. They were afraid that they would end up with a petek chalak, with an empty one. So did they do that because they had what we call insecurity complex, or did they do that out of a midah anava, or maybe on the contrary, they felt that they were roi for the Sanhedrin, so why should we subject ourselves to the possibility that we would be rejected? So it turns out that how many people actually went into the Kalfi? How many of the candidates put their hands into the Kalfi and pulled out a petek?
Only 70.
Only 70. So two of them might have been holding on to a petek halak. I mean, we don't know, right? Let's assume, again, this depends upon statistics 101, but let's say statistically there's a very good chance that out of the 70 who pulled up Tokim, out of the 72, two of them are holding on to a petek halak.
Steve,
you know what I'm saying? So then, if that be the case, if two of them are holding on to a petek halak, two out of the 70, and then there were two, the Eldad who made it and didn't pick it up, Eldad who made it actually had two p'takim that were theirs that said zakin on it that was still sitting in the kalfi. Do you follow my point?
Sure. They could have very well picked a golden ticket.
Correct.
They could have left them in the box.
But it's left in the box. So the pasuk that we started with says Vayisharu shnei anoshim b'machne. Let's read the whole pasuk. And then it says, just 1 second. Oh. Here it is. I don't have to get a chumash right now because he has in the Torah. Or he says, "Vehema baksuvim." Now again, I don't have an article translation, but if we'll take a shot at it, these two words are totally ambiguous. I mean, they don't belong in the pasuk. It says "Vehema baksuvim," and they are in the writings. What does that mean? But according to the Gemara, now this is the Eish Omrim. What it means is that they stayed behind and they didn't participate in the taking of the Ptokim out of the Kalfi, and as a result, they are in the Ksuvim, meaning they are in the Kalfi. They have written on their Ptokim, right, respectively, the word Zaken. And the Gemara says that this whole system, which finally Moshe Rabbeinu settled on, is very parallel to the system of choosing Leviim. What does it mean? Initially, who was sanctified with Kedushas Leviim? The Bechorim. The Bechorim were then substituted, they were downgraded, and replaced by the Leviim. Now, in a perfect numerical system, you would have the exact same number of Bechorim and Leviim. But as we're going to learn now, there's a discrepancy between the two numbers. And the halacha would be that if you were a Levi and you wanted to achieve Kedushas Leviim, if you were replacing a Bechor, fine. Then you didn't have to pay any bucks. You didn't have to spend any money. But if you weren't replacing a Bechor, then you would have to spend a certain amount of money. So there's going to be a surplus number of Leviim vis-a-vis the number of Bechorim, and those surplus would have to pay what we call a pigeon money in order to achieve Kedushas Leviim, but we don't know who they are. So let's take a look at that. Now, again, we've been learning Parshas Baaloscha, and now we're rewinding to Parshas Bamidbar. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Moshe Rabbeinu v'lokachto chameshes Chameshas Shkolim Ligulgoles. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Moshe to receive Chamesha Shkolim, which is called Pidyon HaBechar, for each head, for each Bechar individually. So I'm going to read to you the Hebrew translation. He says, Tziva HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe Litol Chamesha Shkolim Mimasayim Shivim Ushlosha Bechorim. So the key number here for us is 273. Okay, do you have that number? Write down that number, 273. There were 273 Bechorim that did not have a parallel Levi. So I may have said to you before that there were more Levim than Bechorim. Is that what I said? I'm sorry. I learned this Gemara before Sukkah, so it's been a while. Anyway, so the Gemara says the following. I have the numbers here. Okay.
2200.
Yeah. So there was the number of. Just 1 second. It's the 22,273 is the number of what? Of the Bechorim. Okay, I made the mistake. I thought it was the number of Levi. So there are 22,000. Okay, that's fine. 22,000 is a good number. Number of Bechorim. But on top of that, there are 273 Bechorim. So there's 20,000 and then 273. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe that these Bechorim will have a pidyon. In other words, if they want to, in a sense, remove their status as of Kedusha, Kedusha's Bechor, so they need a redemption. So that redemption would normally be 5 shkolim, but in this case, we're going to redeem the kedusha of the bechor onto a levi. But again, how many levim are there? There are only 22,000 levim, so we're left with a surplus of 273 bechorim who would have to be poda themselves because they cannot swap their kedusha with that of a levi because there were only 22,000 Levim. So those 273 surplus Bechorim would have to each be poda himself with 5 Shkolim. Well, which of the 22,373 would have to be poda? Right? Where are these 273? Omar Moshe, Kate said, Esalahem. Li Yisrael, Bechorei Yisrael, should say, right? Im Omer Lo, if I'm gonna look at a Bechor in the eyes and say, Tainli, give me 5 shkolim b'pidyon cha, v'tzei, and then you leave the status of Kedushas Bechor, Yomar Li, he's gonna claim, Kvar Pido Ani Ben Levi, I correspond to one of the Levium, of the 22,000 Levium, and the Levi now replaces me, and I don't need an extra what? An extra pidyon. But, you know, if each one of the Bechorim would make that claim, then we won't come to any conclusion about how do we identify those 273 that need a pidyon of Chamisha Shkolim. Me'asa. So this again is a case which preempts the case of the choice of the Shivim Zekeinim, but it's the same problem. Hevi Esrim Ushnayim Alofim Piskin. The Kasava Lamb Ben Levi, the Al Shlosha Vishivim Umasayim on 273 Ptokim, Kasava Lamb Chamisha Shkolim. Blalon, so he mixes all these Ptokim into one great Kalfi, the son of a Kalfi. On Malahem, he turns to every Bechar, and he says, Tlu Piskechem, pull out a Pesach. Misha Olabiyado Ben Levi, if it says on the Pesach Ben Levi, on Moshe, Moshe would say to them, Kvar Pidacha Ben Levi, your Kedusha was redeemed by a Ben Levi. In other words, the Ben Levi is going to sort of step into your shoes and take your Kedusha. You don't need a pidyon of Chamisha Shkolim. Misha Olabiyado Chamisha Shkolim, Omolo, Tain Pidyoncha Vitse. You have to pay the pidyon. It's interesting that in this case, Moshe doesn't give him a whole spiel of ethics, you know, that a God didn't choose you. It's only a matter of paying 5 shekels. That's not a simple matter, but nevertheless, it's not like someone who was excluded from the Sanhedrin. Okay, so until now we learned the Yesh Omrim. Let's just again summarize what we learned. It says in the Pasuk, Vayisharu Shnei Anoshim B'machne, which means that Eldad and Medad refused to pull out each one of his petek from the Kalfi. He remained rather behind the scenes in the Machne. But in all likelihood, his petek, had he pulled one out, would have said Zakin on. But he didn't pull out the petek. Okay. However, Rav Shimon Omer, he has a different interpretation. What does it mean? V'machne nishtairu, that the pasuk says that vayisharu shnei anoshim b'machne eldar umeid to remain behind in the machne. V'shosh amar lo hakadosh baruch l'moshe osfa lishim zekenim amru eldar umeidan ein anu ru'uyim li'osa gedula. It's not that they were afraid to put their hand in the kalfi because maybe they would be rejected, but rather they felt that we cannot serve as a shofet b'Yisrael. We don't have the godless, the greatness, the credentials to serve in that capacity. So in Rav Shimon's frame of reference, it's not some sort of an overly sensitive individual that doesn't want to be rejected. You know, in Shidduchim, you find very often you suggest a Shidduch to someone and they say no. Why are they saying no? So sometimes they say no because they have reason to believe this is not an appropriate match. But other times they're afraid that they'll be rejected. Yeah. And that's the first pshat of the Yesh Omrim, that the Eldad Umeidad, they were overly sensitive and afraid of rejection. But the second pshat is putting Eldad Umeidad on a very high level. Rav Shimon is praising Eldad Umeidad. Why? Because they were such anovim, they were such humble people, that they wanted to give up their shot of candidacy for the Sanhedrin HaGadol because they felt we weren't Roy. So therefore, they remained back in the Machne. They didn't go to the old Moed to join up with Moshe Rabbeinu in the process of selection. So Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so God declares, Holy me, Atatem es Atzmechem, because of your Mida, your great attribute of humility, Hareini Mosif Gedula al Gedulaschem. Not only will you be members of the Sanhedrin, but you will have a superior status to all the members of the Sanhedrin. Uma Gedula Hosiflem, how does that extra greatness express itself? Shanaviim Kula, meaning each one of the Shivim Zakenim became Neviim. At the moment that they were chosen to sit on the Sanhedrin, Shar Salem, Ruach HaKodesh, Ruach HaNevuah, Nisnabu, and they had a momentary or transitory status of Nevi'im, Upasku. But although for that moment, when they were around the old Moed, and they were chosen by Moshe Rabbeinu, selected to be on the Sanhedrin, they received Nevuah, but that Nevuah completely terminated. But Vehem, these two humble individuals, Eldad Umeidad, Nisnabu Velo Pasku, then Nevuah continued. And now we're getting into the whole question, what was the content of their Nevuah, and why was Yehoshua so upset with their Nevuah? Ma Nevuah Nisnabu Amru, they declared, Moshe Meis V'Yoshua Machnes Es Bnei Yisrael L'Mitzrayim, L'Eretz Yisrael. They were the first to prophesize, and it's a true prophecy, that Moshe would not make it into the land, but rather Yehoshua would take them into the land. Abba Chanin Omer, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Al Iske Slav Hei Misnabim. We're going to soon see that there are three shitos as to what the content of their Nevuah was, and only one of these three shitos is going to make sense in the context of Yehoshua's objection. You could obviously understand that Yehoshua runs to Moshe Rabbeinu with this Nevuah, and he says, they're saying such terrible false Nevuah, they're saying that you, Moshe Rabbeinu, are going to die here in the desert. But according to the second interpretation attributed to Rabbi Eliezer, they foretold the great miracle of the Slav, you know, that pheasant, that bird that would come down from Shemayim and would feed all of Klal Yisrael with poultry. And this is what they said. This is the exact formulation of their nevuah according to Rabbi Eliezer. Alis lav, which means that an oaf, which is called a slav, a certain bird, is going to come up into the machne. Now we have a third opinion. Rav Nachman Omar, al iske gog umagog hoyu misnavim. This is already closer to Sukkot. This is Yechezkel HaNavi, right? That foretells gog umagog. And what was the nature of their nevuah? Ko amar Hashem Elokim. Again, this is codified in Yechezkel, but the original nevuah, according to Rav Nachman, was formulated by none other than Eldad Umeidad, way before Yechezkel HaNavi. Ko amar Hashem Elokim, ha'tohu asher dibarti biyomim kadmonim biyad avodai neviyei Yisrael, ha'neviyim bayomim ahem shnayim. This that I'm telling you, in other words, God says, I'm transmitting you a prophecy, Yechezkel, but this was already transmitted, I already spoke to the Kadmonim, to earlier servants of God, of the Nevi'ah Yisrael, that are two in number. And who are these two in number? That's Eldad Umeidad. La'avioscha aleihem, al tikri shanim el shnayim. If the Masorah has it that the vocalization under the word shanim is a kamatz with a chirik, which means shanim.
Yes.
Shanim meaning years. But according to Rav Nachman, we're going to read it without the Masorah. We're going to read it shnayim. The Ezeim Ashnaim, who are these two Nevi'im that are going to come years later, years earlier in this case? Shenisnamdu b'perek echad. And when the Nach says that there were two of them who were Minasa, apparently they had a Nevuah together, some sort of joint Nevuah. That's rare in Nevuah. Nevuah is usually one single Navi. Occasionally you have Nevuah that resides upon all of the Nevi'im. But in this case, upon two Nevi'im. So it's b'perek echad Nevuah echas. There was one moment in time, and they both got the exact identical Nevuah, the Omer. That's a reference to Eldad and Medad. So first the Gemara wants to analyze, at stage one, how do we know that all the Shivim Zekanim that were chosen by Moshe, selected to serve on the Sanhedrin, though they all had a temporary Nevuah, Omar Mar, we learned in the Brisa called Nevi'im Kulam Nisnabu Pasku, each one of the 70 Zekanim had a Nevuah, but it terminated. But Vehain, the exception of Eldad, who made the Nisnabu Veloposku, they had a continuous Nevuah. Minolan de Pasku. Well, if you're going to tell me that the Shivim Zekanim, in order to serve on the Sanhedrin, they had to have what's called Sharsa Aleim Ruach Nevuah, in other words, the level of both intellectual and moral perfection in order to sit on the Sanhedrin at that time when Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to choose 70 Zekanim was the same level of someone who reaches Nevuah. The Rambam spends a whole chapter in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah to tell you what level you have to reach and achieve in order to be royal in Nevuah. And if you reach that level, you'll automatically get Nevuah. It's guaranteed. So then, apparently at the time that these 70 Zekanim were chosen, they reached that level and they were Uyim L'Nevuah. But Minayin, how do we know DePasku that Nevuah was discontinued? Elema, if you're going to tell me, Yudichsiv. The Pasuk says in Balos Chavayis Nabu V'lo Yasafu. In other words, Lo Yasafu means there was no Tosefes. Not V'lo Yasafu means it didn't stop, which means it was continuous, but rather Lo Yasafu, there was no Hosafa. They had that momentary Vayis Nabu, but V'lo Yasafu, but they didn't continue.
So it's completely opposite meanings. There's two possibilities.
Correct. And the Gemara is going to prove from the Kol Shofar at Maimon Har Sinai, which we mentioned on Rosh Hashanah in the Zichronos, in the Shofros, is that Kol, which says Lo Yasaf, means it's a continuous Kol. Maybe we don't hear it today, but we could potentially hear that Kol. That was the blast of the Shofar at Har Sinai, which we'll hear Mirz Shem at the time of the ultimate Geul. So Gemara says, Al-Me'ata, if you're correct, that V'lo Yasafu means that there was no Tosefes, it didn't continue, but rather it terminated, is what are we going to do with the pasuk in Parshas Vayeschanan at the time of Matan Torah? It says Kol Gadol V'Lo Yasaf. V'Lo Yasaf means who is no Tosefes. Is Hachinami D'Lo Osifu, meaning terminated? We know for sure that the Kol of the Shofar at Maimon Har Sinai was Kayam Liolam. How do we know this? So Rashi in his Pirush Al Torah on the pasuk V'Lo Yasaf says in the name of the Targum V'Lo Pasak, and Rashi has four words. He writes Kolo Chazak V'Kayam Liolam. Rashi says that the strong, powerful blast of the shofar of Matan Har Sinai is Kayam Liolam.
That's categorical, isn't it?
Which means that it continues without any termination, and that's called V'Lo Pasak in the language of the Targum, in the language of the Tanakh, of the Mikra. It says V'Lo Yasaf. So Lo Yasaf means V'Lo Pasak.
Could this phrase mean the two opposite things in different places? Does it always have to be the same meaning?
I guess the Gemara is assuming it should be consistent. So therefore, don't prove anything from V'Lo Yasafu that it means that they didn't continue their Nevuah, because Lo Yasafu could mean the exact opposite, as we saw the Targum says in terms of Har Sinai, Kol Gadol Lo Yasaf Lo Pasak. Ella says the Gemara, we're going to have to assume that when it says V'Lo Yasaf De Lo Pasaku, so what is the source then that proves that the Nevuah of the Shivim Zekanim terminated? It was only temporary, with the exception of Eldad, who made that. So the Gemara says that we should derive this from a comparative study between the way the Torah describes the other members of the Sanhedrin that were chosen and the way the Torah describes Eldad, who made that. Elohacha, the Gemara says, in the case of the others, Kenim, it says, Ksiv Vayisnabu. Vayisnabu is in past tense. Which seems to say that the Torah is telling you that today they don't have Nevuah. So at the time the Torah is written, during Moshe Rabbeinu's lifetime, again, I'm not entering into the whole question of exactly whether the Torah was written by Moshe Rabbeinu piecemeal, or only at the end of his life he wrote the entire Torah. But whatever it is, at some point Moshe Rabbeinu indicates that the Nevuah of the Zekanim was in the past. But Hassam, with regard to Eldad who made that Ksiv, this is just a few psukim later, it says misnabim, not in the Lashon of Vayisnabu in the past, but as you say very well, in the present, Shadayin misnabim v'holchim, that they continue to give the Nevuah. Okay, fine. Now we get to Yoshua. Bishleim l'manti omar Moshe meis, if we assume, like the first opinion of the three opinions quoted here in the Gemara. Let's just remember the name. Who was it? It was Abba Chanin in the name. No, I'm sorry. It was just the Tanakhama, the Braisa, an anonymous Tana. And what was the content of the Nevuah of Eldad Umeidad? It was Moshe Meis. Hainu Dechsiv. Now we understand what Yoshua complained to Moshe Rabbeinu. Adoni Moshe Kla'em, you should destroy them. Put them to death. They're saying false Nevuah.
So was he saying that they were saying false, or they should have no right to say anything?
Excellent question. I mean, let's start with the easy assumption. Why was Yoshua angry at Eldad who made that? And he asks Moshe Rabbeinu to destroy them. So there are two possibilities. They were either angry because of the content of the Nevuah, or they felt that the content of the Nevuah itself proved that it was false Nevuah. So I have here a note in the Masifta who quotes the Achronim. He says the following, that if they got that Nevuah, if Yoshua would agree that they had that Nevuah, but it wasn't appropriate for them to transmit the Nevuah, he says that would violate a principle called Navi HaKoveshes Nevuasa. We're going to have a whole parak in Sanhedrin, I think it's number 11, if I'm not mistaken, or 10, that's dedicated to this concept called Navi HaKoveshes Nevuasa. God gives you a Nevuah, it's meant to be transmitted, and you withhold it. And you chayv misa for such a thing. So if Yoshua actually admitted, you know, he didn't question that Eldad made it receive this Nevuah, then how can he get angry at them for transmitting the Nevuah? It comes under the gather of Navi HaKovesh es nuvuasa. So he says the following. Ein advar mamurim ela kasher adayin lo nechtema hagzera ala adam v'nishlach hanavi kidei la'oro lachzor b'tshuva aval kan shekvar nechtema hagzera al Moshe ein to eles b'nevuasam. Unbelievable. Again, Rabosai, if we had months to study this, I mean, Nevuah is a big sugya. I mean, I'm just, you know, we're not even scratching the surface. But he's saying the following, that there's no Gzeras HaKosuv, which is called Navi HaKovesh Nevuaso, and an absolute, how should I say, without any exception, a Navi has to transmit his Nevuah. Navi HaKovesh Nevuaso is a result of a logically compelling reason for his having to transmit his Nevuah. What is the logic that compels the Navi to transmit the Nevuah? It's tshuva. It's the purpose of Nevuah, to transmit the Nevuah, is to bring people to do tshuva. What that means is that you could have a Nevuah l'ra'ah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is chozer bo. A Nevuah l'tova, there's no chazar. If a Nevuah l'tova doesn't come about, then you know he's a Navi Sheker, you put him to death. But we're talking about a Nevuah l'ra'ah. So there's a Nevuah about Moshe Rabbeinu that he's going to die in the desert. That's a terrible Nevuah. Yoshua did not question the fact that Eldad who made it received this Nevuah. Again, we're going now according to Rav Shimon, for example. Rav Shimon holds that they were great on Novim, Niskatnu, they lowered themselves out of humility, and God rewarded them by giving them a permanent Nevuah. So it's very hard to say that in this context of Rav Shimon's understanding of Eldad who made it, that Yoshua was accusing them of fabricating a Nevuah. On the contrary, their Nevuah was greater, it superseded that of the other 68 members of the court of the Sanhedrin HaGadol. Oh, so if that be the case, we're in trouble. Why? Because if Yoshua admitted that they received this Nevuah, how could he come and claim that they deserve to die because they transmitted the Nevuah? Any Nevuah that you receive, you have to transmit. The answer is that's not an absolute ironclad rule. The Nevuah has to be transmitted for a purpose. If that purpose is achievable, then we apply the principle of Navi Shekovesh as Nevuah Sochayev Misa. But if that Nevuah could not achieve its goal, then it's not meant to be transmitted. Again, you might ask me a question, well, why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestow prophecy when it's impossible to transmit that prophecy, or it's not appropriate to transmit the prophecy? Let's leave that question on the side for just one moment. But Yoshua, on the one hand, checked off the box that they received this Nevuah. That's true. But he X'd the box that they should have been transmitting the Nevuah. This was a Nevuah that should not be transmitted. Why? Because the Nevuah is meant to be transmitted for a purpose. It's a goal-oriented halacha that the Navi is chayev to transmit the Nevuah. What is that goal? Tshuva. Oh. Now we have to ask the question, is it possible to do tshuva and to change the Nevuah? Well, a Nevuah Ra is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is chozeres. Chozeres means that it's conditional. And God could say, I'm going to nullify this terrible prophecy if tshuva is done. So therefore, when a Navi receives a Nevuah l'ra'ah, he must transmit that Nevuah because the Nevuah l'ra'ah could be rescinded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the gzeirah could be batal if the person gets the message and he's misorah to tshuva. Fine. Comes along Yoshua and he says, in this case there is no possibility of tshuva, and therefore there is no obligation incumbent upon the Navi to transmit his Nevuah, because the purpose of transmitting the Nevuah is to bring about tshuva, and in this case there is no possibility of tshuva. Then we get to the next level. Okay, but the nevuah is a true nevuah, and they receive this nevuah, so they have no obligation to transmit it. The din of Novi Yaakovich Nevosachai Bisa would not apply in this case because there's no possibility of tshuva. However, that doesn't solve our problem, because why does Yoshua get angry at El Tadumed? If they receive this true nevuah, they're just sharing with us that which is absolute truth. It's divine prophecy. So he says the following, that if there's no din of Novi Yaakovich as Nevosa, there's no obligation incumbent upon the Novi to transmit his Nevuah, then it becomes also for him to transmit his Nevuah if that Nevuah would undermine the kavod, the dignity of someone. And in this case, whose dignity would be undermined by saying that Moshe is going to be replaced by Yoshua? Moshe Rabbeinu, obviously. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu has the status of, number one, a Navi, and we have a din of Kvod HaNavi. In the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, we're talking about the Navi HaNaviim, right, the greatest of all the Naviim. But beyond that, Moshe Rabbeinu had the status of a Kohen Gadol, and we have a din of Kvod Kohen Gadol. But I think the apex of Kavod is that of a Melech. And again, we'll have a whole sugi about which that's the second parak, which I'm just plotting to get to because I love the second parak of Sanhedrin. But we have to finish up the, I think we'll finish probably tomorrow or the day after. And the question is, which is a greater Kavod? Is that of a Kohen Gadol, that of a Melech? The final conclusion is that a melech has a greater chiyuv. There's a greater chiyuv kavod towards a melech than there is towards a kohen gadol. And we have a principle called melech shemochal kvodo ein kvodo mochul. So vayhi bishurin melech besasei frashiyam. Chazal say that's a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu, that he had a status of a melech. So now you're undermining the kavod of melech and saying that melech is going to die and he's going to be replaced by Yoshua. That you're not allowed to do. So the next question that we have to ask is, why is there no possibility of tshuva? And the answer is, there are two types of gzeros. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares a gzera l'ra'ah, then generally speaking, it's choseres. If we do tshuva, we can nullify that gzera. But there's one exception to that rule. And that's called a gzera shenichtama, that was signed and sealed. Like this is all about, you know, Hoshana Rabbah and everything. It was signed and sealed. And I would add, again, this is not here in the Achronim, but I would add that there was a Shvua. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took a Shvua that Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't enter. Again, if we had a time to take this up, it could be possible that Moshe Rabbeinu not entering into the land was not a punishment for Moshe Rabbeinu. It was a punishment, but it doesn't exhaust itself in Hilchus Onshin, because then there's a possibility of tshuva. It has to do with the entire divine plan about when the ultimate geula would come about. Okay, that's a different discussion. But just to quote to you his language, he says, "Kevan shekvar nechtama hagzera al Moshe Rabbeinu." He puts all the emphasis on nechtama. I wanted to add nechtama v'niskayim hachasima v'niskazka al yedei shvua. But anyway, he just says nechtama. Is therefore, it's not the same as a general gzeru which is lo nechtama v'nishlach hanovi kidei la'or lachzor b'tshuva kan kevin shekvar nechtama gzeru al Moshe Rabbeinu ein to elis b'nevua. Ubi ofen she'ein to'elus b'nevua aser lo lifgoa b'kvod ha'melech. Wow! So it's a whole logical series. So that all works out very well according to one man d'Yomar.
Can I just mention one thing? I don't know if it's relevant. The pasuk about Elder Dumedor Misnabim b'machaneh. This is part of Vayorot Hanar by Agedu Moshe by Omar. And Rashi says the Na'ar is
Yoshua
and Ben Moshe.
Right.
So does that affect things at all? I mean, it's the Torah saying Misnabim, right? But it's like an opinion of the Na'ar. So does that make any difference?
I don't know. I'd have to study that. My impression always was that Yoshua was only the one who called Moshe Rabbeinu's attention.
Okay,
fine. So let's go over this. Bish leim leman diomer Moshe meis hainu duksiv adoni Moshe kloem el leman diomer hanach tarti. But if the substance of the the prophecy of Eldad Umeid that was either about the Slav or to foretell the Melchemes Gog Magog is my, what does it mean that Yeshua gets so upset? Adoni Moshe Klaim, what's the problem here? Okay, in the case of Gog Magog, at least it's a scary kind of thing. You know, there's going to be a Melchemes Gog Magog before the ultimate Gula. But in the case of the Slav, okay, there's a Slav. That's great. You know, Kosh Baruch Hu is feeding us Slav. So the Gemara answers, "De lav orech ara de havile kitalmin amora halacha b'fnei rabo." This is not appropriate for them to prophesize in the presence of Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's called mora hora mora halacha b'fnei rabo. So mora halacha b'fnei rabo is a long sugya. It's in a few places in Shas. And the Gemara says, what's called Bifnei Rabo, what's called Mora Hora? But within a certain proximity, let's say, for example, within what's called Shlosha Parsos, the Talmidim are not allowed to be Mora Hora. But we have two other questions. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Hora is a Psak Din.
Oh, Hora is a Psak Din. Here, if you're prophesizing, what does that have to do with the Psak Din?
Abba Shemayim.
And not only that, even if I guarantee you some sort of an equation here between Hora and Nevuah, in the case of Slav and Gog Magog, does it mean therefore that Yeshua should get so angry that they should be put to death? So the truth is that the Gemara elsewhere, Masechet Eruvin, says that Mora Hora b'fnei Rabo is a very, very severe, is a severe Iser. And we don't realize that Kvod Rabo is a tremendous violation. But again, although that justifies Yoshua's getting angry at them, but to the extent to which he would say Kla'em, I don't know that Mora Horob if they Rabo is Chayv Misa. So let's just read one more line. Okay, excellent. Well, let's just read, if you don't mind.
Does Klaim mean kill
them? I just wanted to lead up to the next.
Does Klaim actually mean kill them?
So let's just learn the next piece of Gemara so that, you know, I tried to build up a certain excitement here, which I think I did. Yeah. I hope I did. So he says the following. He says, if you hold like either Slav or Gog Magog, those two, Hainu Dechsiv, then we understand Mi Yitein. We understand Moshe Rabbeinu's response. And Moshe Rabbeinu was basically saying that their Nevuah has a very serious content, and it's worthwhile hearing. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Mitein kol am Hashem neviim." You know, so he was happy that there was nevuah. Elamadi omer Moshe meis. But if the content of their nevuah of Eldad Umeid was that Moshe would die, is meinach havi nichale? Why would Moshe Rabbeinu say that halavai would be great if every single member of Klal Yisrael would have such a nevuah? That what are these going to die? Does that make Moshe Rabbeinu a happy camper? So Gemara answers, Lo saimuha kaime, which means that Yoshua did not transmit the entire package of the Nevuah to Moshe Rabbeinu. All he said was that they are misnabim b'machana. So again, if we go according to that first Tana in the three Tanoim, that the substance of the Nevuah of Eldad Umeidad was that Moshe Meis v'Yoshua Meinicham Machnisam La'aretz, then we're going to have to go B'dochak and say that Yoshua did not transmit the substance of the Nevuah to Moshe Rabbein. Again, there's going to be a long discussion about why Yoshua withheld the content of the Nevuah. But if that be the case, all that Yoshua Ke'ilu was complaining about is that there were other Nevi'im being Misnabi in the Machna, and Moshe Rabbeinu was very elated about that. That's not Gaiva on their part. Adarabba, if every Jew could be a Navi, that would be wonderful. I don't see it as competition. But then the Gemara says, My Kla'em. What did Yoshua mean when he said, Adoni Moshe Kla'em? Did he really mean literally that they should be destroyed? And let's go according to two out of the three opinions. If two out of three opinions would have it that nevuah is in some way analogous, we don't know exactly why, to Hora's din, and they were guilty of Hora b'fnei Rabban, so why would therefore they be chayv misa? What does Kla'ev mean? But it goes beyond that. Even if I assume, like the first opinion in the Braisa, that they were guilty of undermining Moshe Rabbeinu's kavod by saying that Moshe Rabbeinu would die and he would be replaced, nevertheless, that doesn't justify that they should be put to death. They had the nevuah. Again, it's not a Navi Sheker, because they had that nevuah. They weren't obligated to transmit that nevuah under the halach of Navi Shekavash as nevuah sechayv misa, because there was no possibility of tshuva after the Chasimah's Hagzerah. And therefore they were guilty of, shall we say, undermining the kavod of Moshe Rabbeinu. Fine, but that therefore they claim these are Nevi'im. So the Gemara says, no, don't take the word Kla'im literally. Amalei Yoshua says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Hatel Alehem Tzarche Tzibur. There's a certain facetious, almost a joke here in this Gemara. I don't mean that literally, that the Gemara is joking around, but to some extent, this is a facetious comment to the Gemara. The Gemara says there are two ways of destroying people. One way of destroying a person is literally. The other way is to put such a heavy burden on his shoulders that he's just collapsed. I don't know if he'll die from it. V'heim kolim me'aleihem. And they will die. Why? Because the Tzarchei Tzibur of Klal Yisrael is so heavy that they will collapse from the weight of the responsibility of Tzarchei Tzibur. That's one interpretation of this Gemara. However, other Rishonim have a slightly different understanding of the words V'hein Kolim Me'alehem. And it's the word Hein here is not a reference to them human beings, meaning Eldad Umeidad, but Hein is a reference to their Nevuah. Now the reason it's in plural is because the Gemara is talking about different possibilities of what exactly the Nevuah was, the content of their Nevuah. So the Gemara uses the word Hein over here. But it's referring to their Nevuah. Why? So the Rishonim say the following, Me'achar she'eina Nevuah shora mitoch atzvus el mitoch simcha, V'osek b'tzarchei tzibur eino shari b'simcha is memela einam nevi'im. It goes like this. Again, this is like another one of those domino theories, that they have many premises. So one premise is that nevuah requires simcha. You have to be in a state of joy in order to receive prophecy. The corollary, the flip side, is eina nevuah shari mitoch atzvus. That reminds us of what?
Yeah.
Of tefillah. Do you remember the Mishnah at the beginning of the fifth parak of Brachos, I think it is, that says that you can't stand in davening if you're in atzvus? Because Rav Soloveitchik wrote a whole essay on this called The Lonely Man of Faith, in which he assumes a comparison between prayer and prophecy. The only difference is that in prophecy, God takes the initiative, and in prayer, man takes the initiative. But in both cases, it's a dialogue between man and God. So just like in tefillah, you cannot stand in davening and expect to have some relationship. Tefillah means he's omed lifnei shechina. He's actually engaged in a meeting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That can't take place if you're in a state of atzvus. So too, nevuah is impossible in a state of atzvus, in a state of sadness. So if you're going to impose upon these two nevi'im, that's Eldad Umeidad and Tzarchei Tzibur, and they're going to be responsible for all the situations in Klal Yisrael that arise that need real service, that need really tending to, they're going to end up in a situation, an emotional state of what? Atzvus. And as a result, they won't be able to prophesize. Now again, what was so terrible about their prophesizing? So that depends. If you're saying they inappropriately were undermining the covenant of Moshe Rabbeinu, so Yeshua wanted them to, you know, in a sense, fit into the pattern of the other 68 Zekedim, and then their nevuah should terminate. If, on the other hand, they were guilty of Mora HaRab, if they Rama, that also is an inappropriate use of nevuah, if we assume this comparison between nevuah and Hora's din. And if they're inappropriately using nevuah, then their nevuah should terminate. How do you want to terminate their nevuah? By imposing upon them the tzarche tzibur. Now there are a number of questions that we have to ask here. First of all, who is in charge of tzarche tzibur? If you're looking for a paradigm, you know, the most extreme or profound individual of tzarche tzibur.
Moshe
Rabbeinu. I mean, he really had the brunt and the weight of tzarche tzibur on his shoulders. And yet, he was a Navi Od Kamoshe Rabbeinu. He was the greatest Navi. So how did he achieve Simcha in the state of Atzma? So we're going to have to carve out the career of Moshe Rabbeinu, that during certain periods of time... Correct, and that was Yisro's recommendation, yeah, that he shouldn't accept upon himself, as we discussed earlier, the Tzarchei Tzibur in a single-handed way. But more likely it means that during certain parts of Moshe Rabbeinu's career, he actually lost Nevuah because he was just depressed about the situation of Klal Yisrael. The other question we have to ask is, isn't this a very odd kind of approach that Yoshua is saying they mistreated or they didn't implement Nevuah in the proper way, so what are we going to do? We're going to find an obligation that we're going to impose upon them. That responsibility is really a positive thing. You know, Chazal say that Osik B'Tzarchei Tzibur is Zochet Olam Haba, and so forth and so on. So that seems like a good thing. You know, you're rewarding a crime with Tzarchei Tzibur. Osik B'Tzarchei Tzibur, that's a great opportunity. But what Yeshua's calculation was that ultimately it would bring them to a state of Atzmus, and there's Nevuah would have to terminate. That's a very strange kind of way of bringing about someone's termination of Nevuah. And besides which, who says that Yoshua is right and that it's guaranteed that Eldad and Medad are going to get to the state of Atzmus? Again, in our situation today, here in the state of Israel, you can really get to the state of Atzmus if you try to follow what's going on. I mentioned to Asher on the way here that I really feel I have to take a neder here, some sort of this, that I shouldn't listen to the news, because it really, you know, this. I'm not talking about the world, you know, that's also in and of itself is Atzmus, especially for the Jewish nation. But, you know, Aloch Lemoshe Misinai, we know that they don't appreciate us, and that's an understatement. But to study what's going on within the state of Israel today, it's like, mamish, can't believe it. The words that they use, it's, I understand the adversity of politics makes you, you know, enemies, but ad kedei kach, I mean, these are people with responsibility. Anyway, so that's the bottom line here.
Was Eldad Amedad that still part of the Sanhedrin, or they were never?
I think they were still part of the Sanhedrin, but at some point,
so they were part of the 70?
They were part of the 70.
So what happened to the two, they said they never pulled the Petach out, so what happened to the other two? Did somebody else had to leave, or...
Nobody had to leave because there were two people who pulled out an empty petek, so they were not included in the appointment of Sanhedrin. So there were two empty seats, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu
came in then.
And they came in to fill those seats because had they picked up the two Ptakim that were left in the Kalfi, they would have been.
So theoretically, the first two could have picked the blank ones.
It could be the very first two pulled the blank ones, but those who pulled the blank ones, Moshe Rabbeinu would know about that, and therefore you would have to find replacement. Now, in the second approach of Reb Shimon, there Reb Shimon says that Adarav HaKadosh Baruch Hu was so enamored with Eldad Amedad, they were he was uplifted by the fact that they were humble. You know, it makes sense that not only did they have an extra element of nevuah, but they were also members of the Sanhedrin. But I think, Yossi, your question would be more relevant to the first Tana. So I'll do a little bit more research. According to the first Tana, the reason why they didn't pick up the Ptakim is because they felt that they didn't want to expose themselves to the vulnerability of being rejected. So I don't know what happens with that if they didn't pick up those two Ptakim. So B'li Neder, I'll try to research that for tomorrow. But officially tomorrow we're going to get to the sugya of, you remember we spoke about Beis Din Shakul and a Beis Din that's nota, which means you have to have an odd number of judges on the court. What happens if there's a stalemate on the court? Do we have to replace that one judge that doesn't offer any opinion with two other judges, or how do we work out the situation that should be an even number? So how far do we have until we have Yud Zayin? And we're already pretty much on the bottom of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. So we just have Yud Zayin Amud Beis and a little shtickle on Yud Ches Amud Aleph, and then we can start the lead into the next parak. I mean, the next parak is really, really interesting. What's the status of a Kohen Gadol, the status of a Navi, how to compare the two? And there are many, many other issues of Avelus and Yibum and Chalitza. I mean, it's a very beautiful, beautiful parak. So we'll take that up tomorrow.